Voice of America Sportsnet. Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
See, the problem, because the problem with trying to do a French accent is I only do it one way, and I don't want to be offensive to the French speaking listeners that we have, because my French accent is always, ho-ho-ho.
But that's I am tired
of talking about all of the power plays.
See, but here's the problem, because what you're talking about is classic French from France. The French, they speak more so in Quebec. The Québécois is closer to joual, or what's called slang.
Bring back the Nordiques and bring back Jocelyn Thibault. As the goalie coach.
From Montreal to Memphis, parlez-vous français?
Error. That, commissioner, that is not the response that you got. Yeah, I owe you a beer.
Oh, drops the mic.
I owe you a beer for putting that video up, by the way, because that was a pretty well-trafficked post last night on Puck Daddy. That, if you don't know, the Lamarillo called out Gary Bettman. Bettman gets booed. Lou gets lewd. And then Lou gets up there and...
Lou's explaining the joke. Actually, see, here's what happened. You got booed with a B. I'm getting lewd with an L, as in love. So what up?
I found a loophole in the crowd cheering rules that allowed me to get lewd while you got booed.
I almost turned it off because I was getting annoyed by... Like, it was a really well-done hour or whatever it was. But it was just weird how, like... They were playing Uptown Funk every time they were changing spots on the microphone. It was like Metallica, Foo Fighters, and then it was like, now coming to the stage, Lou Lamarillo, Uptown Funk, you up. Uptown Funk. What? That's not really part of the theme we got going here.
I know. I was so upset they should have played that Mystical song with Mark Ronson. I feel good. This Metallica, by the way, was genius because they started the Marty montage with one and they ended with Hero of the Day, which perfectly tracks both Metallica's career and Marty's fall from grace.
I saw that tweet. I like the song Hero of the Day.
It builds nicely.
We're off to find... Remember they did the whole, like, the whole orchestra?
Yeah, remember there being, like, a real blue-collar aspect to that video, too. It was for the working man.
We're off to find Corey Schneider as his replacement.
I liked the ceremony a lot. First of all, you know, it's fun having Lamarillo back there and seeing the love in and people appreciating what he did and how he built the team. And, you know, it's all right. The end of it was kind of bad, but then, you know, we can remember all the good times. I do love the fact that it's so clear that the Devils owners for this Brodeur thing spent a lot of money to get the statue, to facilitate like a 4-day celebration. Right.
Flying in all these guys,
yeah,
probably.
Flying in all these guys. They had a giant stage that actually looked like it cost money. And I was trying to think about, like, if Lamarillo was still the guy holding the purse strings for the Brodeur celebration, like, what would it have been? It would have been like a public access set. It would have been like a podium, and then maybe somebody standing behind him holding a jersey and like in a black bodysuit, so they don't see him.
They give Sammy Hagar $100 to come in and sing "Running with the Devil" just like by himself, no microphone.
That was David Lee Roth, sir.
Was it?
Yeah, I need to step up and correct the ledger here, but.
Well, that would make it even funnier. Sammy Hagar is so desperate for money. I don't know.
Yeah. Mega kudos. Well, what's his face then? Oh, come on, Gary...
Lehman.
No, the dude from...
Roberts.
The dude from Extreme who took over. Gary Cherone.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Anyways, that's right. I made a Krull reference on the podcast yesterday, so we're going down the rabbit hole of obscurity here.
Krang?
I'm so excited for Krang and the Ninja Turtles movie. I don't even care. I don't even care that the first one was terrible.
I was going to say, I feel like, again, why is every movie the same? Like, someone was like, oh, a new Ninja Turtles movie. I'm like, oh, is it a sequel to the one that came out like a few years? No. I remember working somewhere.
It is a sequel.
It was like a redoing.
You had three original Turtles movies. The first one, the second one, Vanilla Ice, and the third one where I believe they go back in time to feudal Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they find Hero from Heroes there or not. That might have been an interesting crossover. And then they have the reboot, the Michael Bay reboot, with Megan Fox as April O'Neil. Perfect casting, by the way, as a redheaded journalist.
Right. I remember that.
And now it seems like what's happened. So the first movie was basically like Amazing Spider-Man all over again. It was a creepy guy who may or may not be Shredder, I forget, trying to mutate the world. Much like the Turtles were mutated. So it's very much like the lizard plot from Amazing Spider-Man.
It's like the X-Men plot where...
And also the X-Men
Magneto
plot,
Magneto wants
right.
to mutate all the rich people in New York or
he
whatever.
He puts his hand on those balls and he starts vibrating. Ian McKellen.
We've all been there.
And then using Anna Paquin's power to try to mutate the world like Senator Kelly was mutated into a giant He looked like one of those wigglies that you would hold, and they get real. You try to squeeze it, and then it shoots out of your hand. And
so the X-Men movies were so bad, yet I feel like they had the most to work with. Like I'm so sick of superhero movies, mm-hmm. but like, how many bad Wolverine movies are we gonna make? How many like?
There was a few.
Like I like the new X-Men's with Fassbender and all those people, mm-hmm. but like. I mean, you look back and it's like Rebecca Romijn was like the star.
Wolverine Origins is one of the worst movies I've seen. Most disappointing movies I've seen.
Anyway, yeah, very disappointing.
The second Ninja Turtles movie is the sequel to the first Ninja Turtles movie, spoiler. And now it looks like they've decided to be like, oh, right. Oh my god, there's a reason why people actually like these characters. It's because they had a giant animal called Bebop and Rocksteady, and they were getting mutated and chasing people, and Krang, and the Terrordrome, and all this other like cool sci-fi shit that was cool in the cartoon is now going to be part of the movie.
I don't remember any of that stuff. I just remember Michelangelo was a party dude, mm-hmm. Teenage Mutant Ninja. I remember the cartoon. Like, I don't want to watch.
Krang was in the cartoon though, the Terrordrome.
Yeah, the cartoon, but like, I mean, I feel like we're at a point where we don't need a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie, do we?
No,
do we?
Come on. It's not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie that you need. Now, but the one that
no,
the line? It was the not the one that the you one need,
you, be the one you deserve.
Deserve, not the one we deserve, but the one that
it would have to be your bowl. I can get a good look at Michelangelo by sticking my head up Shredder's ass, but I'd rather take the Rat King's word for it.
Some Ninja Turtles are always trying to ice skate uphill. Just keep pulling out terrible action movie lines.
I like how we've gone from Martin Brodeur to 1980s, 1990s.
Well, I mean,
cartoons.
The common denominator is pizza. But Brodeur night last night was pretty fun. They did a heck of a job. The stage looked great. I love the giant pucks with tape on them to signify all of the awards that he won. It was great to see the cup back in New Jersey for the first time in many, many years. And it was a good time. The only thing I didn't like was who decided that giving Gary Bettman 12 minutes
I don't understand
of speechifying would be the thing to do? Now, is it because the new owners defer to him because he facilitated a sale and they all somehow made all the debt go away? I don't know. Is it Marty's request? He's like, I'd like nothing more than Gary Bettman, the guy who stole
there.
My money as a player and helped put together a committee that restricted my access to the puck as a defensive player. I'd like nothing more than this man to honor me. Like, listen, Gary does his thing. He's a very good speaker, sure, whatever. But the idea that this is the guy who gets the glut of the time at the Brodeur ceremony in front of fans who vehemently hate him.
Right.
I just despise him.
Like I'm thinking about all these teams that have retired numbers. Like, does Gary Bettman show up at those? Like,
but they're not, a lot aren't in the New York metropolitan area where you can get there on the subway.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's like an appearance at a convenience. Like, oh, I can just, you know, hop in my limo and get there in like 20 minutes and I'll give a great speech. No, Gary, Patrick Elias got like a minute 10. Let's maybe give him some more time. And by the way, I could listen to Josh Harris talk all day because he sounds exactly like Steve Carell in Foxcatcher.
He does. He's right.
You know, I don't really know if the fans here really appreciate me and the job that Martin Brodeur has done for the Devils.
It's like a little like, Foxcatcher, a little Ben Carson.
Like it's not pure Carell and Foxcatcher. It's like 67,
right, it's
80%
like,
maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of like almost like a cleft palate-y thing going on a little bit.
Like, he almost sounds like a teenager in a way a little bit, but he definitely talks in a way where you want to help him with his speech pattern. And just like, this guy's a billionaire. Like, how did he get his money? It definitely wasn't through force of talking in business meetings.
But do you think Gary Bettman does take the subway? And what happens when somebody does their routine in front of him and asks for money? Does he ask about cost certainty?
I know for sure that he takes obviously it's a car service, but he lives somewhere in North Jersey. I forget the exact town, but somebody once told me a story about how on his way home, he would ask his driver to pull into a Subway on Route 17, an actual like Subway restaurant, not
Eat
a Subway.
Fresh.
He's like, I could really go for a chicken teriyaki right now. And I always picture that because like when I worked at the NHL, he would always get in his car like in the back of the building at 1185 6th Avenue. Mm-hmm. And whenever I'd see him get in his car, I would always picture like, is he going to get Subway on the way home today? is he going to want the Italian on the way? What's he going to get? Like, how does he ask, too? Like, is the driver just kind of like, fine, I'll pull in? I always picture that. But I don't know why he needs to be there.
He seems the type that probably gets the wheat the wheat bread, but probably gives a little side eye to that one with a cheese on top of it.
Definitely. Definitely the wheat bread. I think for sure he's like a whole wheat bagel kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But like,
what
I don't.
What is that supposed to mean?
Hey, you know what I'm saying. Once you go whole wheat.
New York lawyer, as the Canadians would say.
Yeah, I love that reference. I don't know.
It's the single most anti-Semitic thing that they've ever coded.
Right, and I remember the first like handful of times I heard it, like years ago, I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, he's Jewish. Oh, I see what you're doing. I get it. You
crafty knuckleheads.
You're a rabid anti-Dentite.
The ceremony was great. Devils win. They had to win that one, and they got a win against Edmonton. McDavid... I was talking to Corey Schneider about McDavid, and he's just like, he just does things instinctually that no one should be able to do. It's scary good. Like, yeah. He's going to be so good.
He knows where to go. Mm-hmm. That's such a skill. It's like the Crosby skill, the one that everyone always kind of overlooks. Just knows where to go. Knows where the puck's going
to
be.
Fun to watch. Good, great player. Boring ass interview, but that's all right. He's a young robot.
He's 19.
The Devils fans really made their presence known last night, hooting and hollering and chanting and cheering. But I'd like to talk about one chant in particular, Dave Lozo. Now, as you know,
what chant would it be, Greg?
As you know, the Devils fans many years ago responded to the tyranny of Rangers fans who would bully. I mean, let's. I don't like throwing around the word bully in this day and age, but they used to bully Dennis Potvin.
Yes, they did.
Saying Potvin sucks and doing the whistle cheer and the whole bit, and Devils fans responded by stealing the whistle cheer and then making it their own and then turning it into Rangers suck. Boy, that was fun. It was a really good time. It was dueling chants. The Rangers would come in and they'd be like, oh, that's so mean to be able to take in our chant and put it right back on us. And it was such great psychological warfare. And might I add, the reason why the Devils won 3 cups during that time period when the Rangers didn't win any. I believe that's exactly why it happened. Now, some years later, as you may or may not know, Devils fans decided it's important to spread the love with this cheer.
Right.
And they decided to bring in their brethren from the city of brotherly love, the Flyers, into the chant.
Very inclusive.
So then the chant would go, Rangers suck, Flyers swallow.
Right.
Which to me is, you know, it's okay to say sucks. Things this sucks, that sucks. When you get it a little bit more explicit on the swallowing and the whole bit.
At that point, you can no longer have the willful ignorance of, well, when I say suck, I mean stink. Then once you bring a swallow in after the suck, we now know exactly what the suck is going to be in that.
You lose
chant.
Plausible deniability. Plausible deniability of the suck the and word. The swallow. Well, I regret to inform you that my brothers and sisters in Devil's Nation, NJD Nation, Jersey Zone, Jersey's Army, the Red Army, the Army of the Devil, 666 times 16,000, most nights 12, have added on an addendum to this chant that our friends in Pittsburgh may want to know about. It now goes, according to my sources, because I couldn't make it out all the time. Rangers suck, Flyers swallow, Sydney watches. Or Crosby watches.
Crosby watches?
One of the two.
So here's again, I go back to this point all the time when I hear this chant. If you find someone who's willing to suck and swallow, that's not a negative thing. That's not a mean chant. That's actually a very positive thing. Now that we've added on somebody else watching, which is now, I mean, we can't even pretend like it's not a sex act we're chanting about here.
Yeah.
It's a blowjob in which somebody swallows the aftermath of it. We won't get too graphic on this podcast.
But
we know. We know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
My question that I asked you outside before you came in here is, with the sucking and the swallowing and the watching, are the Devils the most sexually frustrated fan base in the NHL? They have to be.
It's entirely possible.
I mean, it's crazy that you would have this many, because like by 2022 it's going to be Crosby watches, Ovechkin plays with my butt. Taves.
Now we're bringing in the Blackhawks the conference.
Right, right. We're gonna have like every single elite player in the league doing some weird sex stuff.
Yeah, the Pacific Division is just going to be a human centipede. We're just going to just kind of blanket cover that division with that thing. It's a bit much. It's now a bit. First of all, you know, demonizing voyeurism really in this day and age.
I mean, not for nothing.
I mean, if you watch Big Brother, you obviously are an endorser of voyeurism in some way, shape, or form.
Whatever you're into, whatever floats the boat and then has someone swallow the boat.
I mean, like, it's You know, I'm not one of these people ever who is like, how am I supposed to bring my kid to the game? I'm like, it's easy. You go on a Saturday afternoon and you sit downstairs and by golly, you'll be fine. Except,
you know,
when there's 16,000 people chanting Flyers swallow Crosby watches.
It's getting to be, and like, it's just, and the fans are so dedicated to like this stuff, like the hey, you suck stuff. Like everyone,
that's fine.
See, it's fine.
The war between Devils fans and the ownership over the goal song where they take away the pedophile song and then they try to make it something new and they still find a way to say you suck during it. Great.
But there's
good
just
on you.
There's just this real fascination with sucking stuff at Devils games. Like, I don't know what's going on with the 10-5 or the 12-5 or the whatever the max attendance is for a game.
Yeah.
By the way, I also love how they if you were really doing a Marty Brodeur night, wouldn't you do it against the Rangers? But nope, got to do it against Edmonton.
Got to get those fannies in the seats for Edmonton.
Because otherwise
there'd
be
9,000. I love that idea. Why waste the Rangers sellout crowd? And no, you wouldn't do it against the Rangers because that means a bunch of idiots with Avery jerseys would show up on Marty Brodeur night, and that's the last thing you ever want.
Montreal, then.
Yeah, it would work fine. Yeah. Please stop, is my message to Devils fans. Right. It's getting really creepy. Why would Sidney even want to watch that? Or do you have him shackled to the wall? Are we now talking about some sort of imprisonment?
And whose arousal are we heightening here in this you know, crazy telephone game of sexual chants? Mm-hmm. Like, is it the fan? Like, who is being sucked? Who is being swallowed? I don't understand what we're doing anymore.
If I'm Sidney Crosby, I'm rather pleased to not be involved in this crazy Ving Rhames gimp fantasy that's going on with the Rangers and the Flyers at this point.
And is Sidney watching voluntarily? Is he, like, tied up like the Ving Rhames situation?
Or is it like in college where Sidney's keeping watch and he's just like, hurry up, Flyers and Rangers. I don't know. I think the RA's on his way.
Yeah. Uh-oh, here comes Gary. Stop.
They want to wrap it up there.
It's like, it's going to be like Sidney watches, Ovechkin turns up the music loud enough so nobody can hear anything.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, if there's one thing we know about Sidney Crosby, he's got the patience of a saint, really. And I feel like he would be the perfect person to kind of stand by the door and make sure that no one's trying to, your roommate's coming back, man. Put a sock on the door. I don't know if I can find a sock that quickly, Rangers.
It's going to be like the longest. It's turning into like fanfic. It's going to be like the most. Like, we're going to have like every player involved. Corey Perry calls the next day. Brian Getzlaff.
Whistlers. A hockey fantasy. It's my ebook on Amazon.
Coming.
I like that.
Soon.
You're terrible. I liked the idea last night of including the Islanders and everybody else in the division. Obviously, it's, you know, Islanders mop up, Washington lectures you about STDs, Hurricanes blow, or is that redundant? And then BJs.
Bruins pretend like they don't have any condoms. Dun, dun, dun. It's just a full 3-minute chant.
Montreal starts really strong and then kind of just loses it after a while.
Lightning says it happens to all guys. Just all
Florida, surprisingly potent.
Meanwhile, like, this is going to be the thing that gets frowned upon. Yet, Nazem Kadri will also be lumped in
now
with his whole
the throat slash thing is so interesting to me because if I remember the history of this, like. You know, they cracked down on it because they felt like it was unbecoming of a league that willfully allows its players to assault each other to have them pantomime threats.
Right. Like, you can literally sucker punch a guy in the face, give him a concussion, and he doesn't get anything. But, like, if you do – like, it's all about context where in a contact sport where a dude gets hit and, like, Kadri had no reason to get mad. It was a good hit by Giordano. But it's sports. Like, you get mad. The follow-through, like, a glove maybe nips your face. You get mad about it. And you basically – and I thought this before I actually saw the video. I saw someone tweet that he made the gesture. And I'm like, well, all he's doing is saying, I'm going to kill you. That's what you do in sports sometimes is you say, like, I'm going to effing kill you.
We're gonna murder these guys.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not literal. So, like, when I saw the video, he does the throat slash thing and he actually says, I'm going to kill you. He's mad. That's all that is. It's not a huge deal. Like, it's all about – like, you can't do that in your office. You can't – like, if your boss is like, Greg, I need that video on my desk. I don't know why a video would be on your desk. It's going to be like in this old-timey –
You're the realist, chief.
I know I said 5 Friday, but I need it by 1 o'clock Thursday. And you give the throat slash. You can't do that. Like, you should not do the throat slash to, like, a jury. That's probably a bad place to do it, too. But in sports, that's all it is. And, again, going back to the whole thing with
your
kids.
You're going to give me another deadline? How about this? Your deadline.
It's like, we're going to have to send you to HR.
And by the way, whenever you do the throat slash, I really frown upon anybody who doesn't do the Quaitons throat slash from the old Looney Tunes cartoons. Whenever they do the throat slash, they make this noise. It's Quaitons for you. You see Quaitons.
Quaitons.
They make that noise as they put their finger across their throat. I frown. I'm sure Nazem Kadri is not as schooled in old school Chuck Jones as you or I are.
But like, he's not going to go out in the parking lot and find Mark Giordano and stab him. He's just pissed off in the moment, like anyone would be in that situation. He's not literally threatening his life. And if your kids are watching, your kids aren't going to murder anybody. They're just going to do the gesture too, and they're not going to know what it means. And you explain to them, "Oh, he's okay. Don't do it. Fine. It's not." But I guarantee you, he gets a game over this. Yeah. I guarantee it.
It's also like a thing where knowing Mark Giordano's injury history, there's as good a chance that he falls on a knife.
Yeah, it would have been actually crueler if he had like pointed to his shoulder and did like a knife thing around his rotator cuff. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going to be out 6 months, buddy.
Yeah. But you think that this is? I mean, I don't think any is anything going to befall Kadri for this stuff?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's another Colin Campbell situation where he's going to review it, and I bet anything he gets a game. We have to, again, context. Like it's a contact sport. People get pissed. People say worse stuff all the time. And again, you just need to sort of just don't worry about your kids. Like I was live. I was going to say, like, you know how they don't show streakers on TV?
Yeah.
But somehow they'll show this over and over again. Like, this is the worst thing ever. Look what he did. Well, why? Well, if it's so bad, why are we showing it every 2 seconds on Sportsnet or wherever? Not on ESPN.
Well, because it's something that happened on the ice between players, and that makes it okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But if I take off all my clothes and run around on the ice, somehow that's frowned upon by society.
Unless there's a slide whistle involved on the highlights, then it's completely
yeah. Okay.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think taunting and throat slashing and that kind of thing, I understand why leagues want to crack down on it.
I
understand that there's a certain amount of like violent imprinting that leagues do when it comes to young fans, and you don't necessarily want them to set the example for kids who go around the playground or wherever the hell they are, wherever the hell kids go now, and start slashing their throats and punching people in the face. I get that. But at the same time, it's like the taunting on the ice is a constant thing.
And just
because it's pantomimed
for
the cameras doesn't mean
that it
doesn't exist.
It just drives me insane. You know, the society we live in, Greg. Why can't we have more violence? That's what I always say.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What did you think of the FNUF trade? I want to get your take on the Dion FNUF trade.
I don't know. What's the deal? I don't know what Ottawa's doing. I don't understand why. I mean, I get like they didn't give up really anything important to get him, but I mean, if you're going to use him as a second pair guy and let Eric Carlson play with somebody else in the top pair, it's fine. But I mean, it's just you're making this push for the wild card spot. You're really, you know, tying up a ton of money for a team that, you know, usually has some sort of budget situation. I love it for Toronto, man. Toronto
clearing the decks.
Like I wrote yesterday, like now that this is it. Like they've completely denoticed the team. They've completely just gotten themselves clear of basically everything. They still have Joffrey Lupul, but I mean now, like I don't think it makes them go after Stamkos any harder. They were going to go after him anyway. But
yeah.
it's just a really good move because, you know, if Mike Babcock can somehow make Jared Cowan a usable defenseman again, great. If not, whatever. It's no big deal. It's a good deal for Toronto. I love it, but I hate it for Ottawa. I don't know what
I don't hate it for Ottawa. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, I wrote about the Toronto rebuild this morning and how much I'm so much more impressed with this than anything Brian Burke did in the sense that Burke went in there and said, we don't need a five-year plan. Because I won so quickly in Anaheim, I know we can do the same thing here. Now, I don't know if that's pressure from above or it's his own hubris. I tend to believe the latter. But, you know, and you could also argue that the team had to bottom out before they got the cachet to build it the way they're building it now. But the bottom line is that Brandon Shanahan, Lou Lamoriello, Mike Babcock, everyone involved in that team has so far shielded Rogers and Bell from being like, no, you cannot do this. You have to get better very soon.
Right.
And it's to their credit. And they've also it's also to their credit that like during Burke's regime and Notice's regime, you constantly heard about how difficult it was to trade all these players because of their contracts, because of their no-move clauses, this, that, and the other thing. And in the last year, we've seen Kessel go,
right.
Phaneuf go, and also David Clarkson getting traded for a guy who's right. not, never playing again.
Right.
And, like, maybe it just takes someone who's able to finesse it better
right.
than Brian Burke.
I mean, honestly, I am really surprised that they didn't have to retain anything in it. Because, like, we were talking about this the other day. Like, what do the Rangers do once their window officially shuts probably after this year? Like, trade Rick Nash, but they have to retain salary? Like,
probably, yeah.
But, like, if you don't have to retain Dion Phaneuf's salary.
Maybe.
I mean, and there's only 2 years left trade his deal.
To Vegas and get, so they can hit the floor.
Right. Like, I mean, this probably gives you hope that you can trade Dan Girardi if you're a Ranger fan. But I love it from the standpoint of rebuilding. I love it from the standpoint of now they've fully committed to the tank for the rest of the season. They're going to try and get Austin Matthews. And if they go into the next year with Austin Matthews and
Steven Stamkos.
Stamkos, Nylander, they probably sign a defenseman too with all the money they have. Like, they're in, again, like, they're still so far away. Like, they're not, like, again, like, look at Buffalo, where they added a lot of good pieces for this year, and they're still pretty much the same crappy team they were last year because it takes time. Like, Toronto still isn't even at that point yet, so they're probably still three years away.
Does this trade indicate to you that behind closed doors, behind the scenes, that's right, Crosby watches.
Hey,
that they know a bit more than anyone does about Stamkos. Like, this deal would seem to portend that they understand that he's gonna come there.
I know people don't want to make a big deal out of him liking tweets, but I think that's a huge sign that he doesn't really want to be back in Tampa. I think he's miserable there. And I'm not basing this off of like his agent isn't like back channeling me to tell me these things. I just, you know, based on his responses.
Back channeling.
Hi. When I'm behind closed doors, I like to back channel. I think that's a fair point. Like, but like, yeah, like as I was saying, like I think they had a ton of money available anyway, so they could have gotten him for whatever price they wanted to get him at, but now it's just. But also from the Stamkos point of view, like I don't know because again, like they're so far away. Even if they get Stamkos, they're most likely not going to be a playoff team next year and probably the year after that. But I mean, is it worth it that much to come home and play in Ontario for him?
Well, it could be. I still think the geography and family aspect of this is a bit more of a draw than people let on.
Yeah.
And I also think that the part of this about Stamkos that is important to remember isn't necessarily, oh, good, they have cap space for him. Well, of course they're going to have cap space for him. They're going to find a way to get him in there, and if he wants to play there, he'll find a salary range that would fit the team so he can play there. The most important thing is he's going to go there, and there isn't going to be all of these toxic contracts that are going to keep them from rebuilding the way they want to
right.
or quickly or what have you. Around Stamkos if he goes. Because I still think, I said this yesterday, I still have a real problem wrap my brain around the idea that a kid in his prime who can be a 50-goal scorer in this league and wants to win a cup desperately would go to a team where not only are you rebuilding for 2 to 3 years, you don't even know if it's going to work.
Exactly. Like people were like, well, you don't know how good Tampa's going to be in 2 or 3 years. Right, but I know how good they're going to be.
I know they got Victor Hedman.
Next. Yeah, right.
You know?
You have Victor Hedman. You have the triplets. You have – and I get you probably – it's going to be hard to keep all those guys for a long period of time, but the immediate future in Tampa is obviously much clearer,
yeah.
and you know what you got. Toronto, it's,
yeah.
it could be anything. Like they could still screw it up.
Of course. The best example is Minnesota.
Yeah. Now,
when Parise and Suter had to make their decision, they made the decision to go there
yeah.
partially on the promise of
all those kids. Right.
And, you know, I still think it's going to work out there. I just think they need to kind of change some personnel up, get a center, and get the coach out of there at some point. But, you know, you have all of these young players in that roster, and you're saying to yourself, they'll be fine. They'll be fine there. And they made that bet based on that promise of contention. Which they've contended. I mean, with that group. In Stamkos' case, he would literally be the first broad brushstroke on an empty canvas.
Right, and they'd be building like the opposite way teams build. You don't really build through free agency. You draft, and then you add pieces like Marion Hossa.
No, I still think they're going to build through the draft, don't you?
Well, I mean, that's what I mean, but like, you don't know how those draft picks are going to work out.
Usually,
by the time the Marion Hossa guy shows up, he's already been surrounded by a bunch of guys that have been drafted and are doing really well, and they're developing. Like here, it's just you're just kind of like taking this leap of faith, and I remember thinking it was crazy that Parise was going to go back to Minnesota just based entirely on family, but for some guys, that's a huge deal.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know how big a deal it is for Stamkos, but if it is, I can totally see him doing it.
Yeah, and then you hope that the big brains in the front office that have been able to facilitate this demolition and the big brain behind the bench who can be one of the best coaches in hockey at times, they figure this thing out. You're basically betting on the fact that these guys have a plan and that you go there to be close to home, to be the guy who brings the Leafs the championship, and you're hoping that the right guys are in place now. And again, the only way they're ever going to win is by tearing it down and just trying to hit the reset button, try it all over again, start from the first board on the game. The only way they're ever going to do that is do that, and it's been a long time coming for this franchise.
They've set it up. They've set it up perfectly at this point. The rest of the season is just going to be about trading Brad Boyes, trading P.A. Parenteau, getting worse and worse and worse so they can get as many lottery balls as they can. And if they get Austin Matthews, that makes them a much more attractive destination too, because it's like the Connor McDavid thing where Connor McDavid will get you Tom McClellan. Connor McDavid will get you Pete Chiarelli. They'll get you Andre Sequeira. They'll get you prize free agents to come there. So at that point, if they get Austin Matthews, I could totally see Steven Stamkos thinking, I want to come there and play with this kid for the next 7 years, I guess, essentially. But I just, man, like, it's just such a gamble because it's one thing to tear it down the right way, but, Lou didn't really have a really great run towards his end of his time in Jersey.
Kyle, you don't know.
Shanny's still new at it.
Kyle, I've got confidence in, but
I have confidence in all those guys.
Lamoriello showed he didn't really know what a modern NHL player looks like towards the end of his run,
But like, there's no reason at this point to be like, well, I'm pretty sure it's not going to work out. I mean, with what they've done, like again, they did the Buffalo Sabres routine where they just got a bunch of dudes for 1 year deals and they were going to tank this year and do whatever they can. They then trade off their guys and get worse this year, get better next year with a top pick. And again, the 16-17 Leafs are not going to be good if they get Stamkos and Austin Matthews. They're not going to be good. But they're on the right path. They're on the perfect path. It's just a matter of not screwing up with the free agents and not screwing up the draft. And we're still a ways away from knowing how they're going to do there.
Before we get to some listener mail, I'm sure you probably have some queued up to address.
Let me see.
Let's discuss last night's The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story.
I was just dying for Schwimmer to just walk into the mansion and just go, the juice is loose.
He called him OJ last night, which was a change from the first episode when all he did was refer to him as the juice.
There was a couple references to juice, but not the juice, I noticed. It was more like juice is on the highway.
You and I both kind of feel the same way about the episode, that it was a bit dull. And the reason why it was dull is it had Phantom Menace syndrome. You knew exactly what was going to happen to all of these characters last night. You knew O.J. was not going to commit suicide in the back of the Bronco.
Right.
You knew the SWAT team was not going to shoot O.J. Simpson. It drained of all of that drama. The show was dull because it didn't really tell you anything you didn't already know about the situation, outside of the fact that Pizza Hut ran out of cheese.
That was so weird. That was like the weirdest product placement I've ever seen in a movie or TV show ever. It's just like, how can we convey people are sitting around watching this?
For those who didn't see it, OJ's in the white Bronco. The NBA final
episode
between New York and Houston is being preempted for this chase. Everybody's hunkering down and getting ready to watch this thing and how it plays out, because it could go on for quite a number of hours. And they cut to an old school Pizza Hut, and they're making pizzas for people, and they run out of cheese.
And that's it.
And this is your grand example of how a society has fallen into chaos because of the white Bronco chase. Is that literally the giant beaker of cheese that they're using to put on the pan pizzas is now empty.
I choose to believe that that Pizza Hut was poorly run.
That's right.
And just didn't order enough cheese for the week anyway. It had nothing to do with OJ. It was just weird.
I would like to see a sidebar series or maybe a webisode of the rise of Domino's thanks to the inadequacy of the Pizza Hut service during the White Bronco chase.
I would have loved to have been like the two writers who were like, all right, how do we convey this? How about Taco Bell runs out of no, Taco Bell wasn't big back then. How about Burger King runs out of burgers? No, that's stupid. They wouldn't run out of burgers.
Where are my burgers? Yeah. People are watching the OJ chase. We ain't got no patties.
It's got to be a delivery thing. God. How about we do like an Avoid the Noid reference? No, that's too old. That was the 80s. Come on. Come on, Bill. Get it together. We got to really... Pizza Hut.
It really wasn't a very. I mean, we saw it. It was a nice recreate. It's the episode that we were worried we were going to see throughout the series,
right? Where
which
it's
was
just...
a note perfect recreate. The Gus Van Sant psycho of O.J. Simpson miniseries, just a note perfect recreation of something we've already seen, but with no insight or anything new spin on what we had already seen.
It's just not. It wasn't a good episode. I think the next one's going to be good because the whole. I think the trial is going to be. I think in the previews it was like coming up next week on The People, and it was just like O.J.'s like that person's doing a bad job lawyering or whatever the dialogue was, and I'm looking forward to that, but. Yeah, this episode was just, you know, the forced Kardashian reference. Hey, it's the kids sitting around the TV chanting Kardashian. Oh, boy. I didn't think they literally chanted Kardashian. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just when you think you couldn't hate the Kardashian family more.
Right.
You're like, oh, these fictional Kardashians make me hate the real Kardashians even more.
Although I do like the idea of Khloe and Kim and all of them sitting around a table with candles lit. And that's her, like, that's her, like, atonement when they're trying to call the demon forth that gave them this career. Kardashian. Hello, ladies. How's the E show?
You will have a freemium game that pays you billions. For some reason, we don't know what a freemium game is in 1994.
Now, Kim, I need you to get Kanye to tweet out a defense of Bill Cosby.
And on the day of the show, Malcolm Jamal Warner, star of The Cosby Show, will be featured prominently so it'll all connect.
Right, and then the demon crawls back into the head of Kris Jenner, and she goes, wow, I had the craziest dream.
And Schwimmer, the whole episode, is like not crying. He's just constantly on the verge of tears.
Dog. But he's always been like that. That was his best move on Friends. It was two modes for Schwimmer on Friends. By the way, Dave Lozo, in case you didn't know, co-hosted the show today. I don't even think we said that.
Hey, how you doing? Dave Lozo. Nice
Friends to Friends aficionado, if there ever was one. Yes. Schwimmer had two modes on Friends. It was hang dog, I'm on the verge of tears. And then also manic, yelling, staccato, David Schwimmer.
He was full on thinking that OJ was cheating on him with Mark the entire episode.
Yep.
That's what he was. And he was doing smell the fart acting in a lot of the scenes, too, where he was just kind of like, your dad killed himself. First of all, by the way, I can't believe that actually happened in real life. Like, I get why he thought that, but I mean – yeah. You can't wait for confirmation.
He walked into he's talking to OJ's family.
With his Bible.
And it's an amazing scene. He's got a Bible with him. He's going to tell them that OJ committed suicide. And in their darkest, deepest moment of despair, lo and behold, we're now going to drop this broadcast for breaking news. And here's the White Bronco going on the road. And the anchor's literally like, contrary to reports in the living room of the Simpson family by Robert Kardashian, OJ's alive.
And Ross is like, well, you heard the report. The gun's to his head, so I could still be right. So let's just see. Let's just see how time plays out here.
The TV was going to say that. Oh, Ross.
Oh, Chandler, I thought he killed himself. Could I be any more alive?
Now, you had a genius idea, which is that you believe that bulky Malcolm Jamal Warner should have been O.J. Simpson instead of Cuba Gooding Jr.
I think he's younger than Cuba Gooding. Maybe he's not younger. I don't know. He looks younger, but he seems more like O.J.'s
more
age
bulky.
At the time. He's like a bigger, more imposing figure. Like, I believe Malcolm Jamal Warner as a former UCLA or USC running back as opposed to. But I mean, it wouldn't be a huge deal if not for the fact that everyone on the show looked exactly like the people they're playing in real life. But not a good episode. I'm really
Theo,
looking forward.
Theo, why did you kill those people?
I'd like to talk to you about driving.
And the Akito ran through the blood and is deep in the blood in the street. And
why you got a Ford Bronco? Because OJ does. I'd like to talk to you about chauffeuring.
Take the gun away from OJ and give him a delicious pudding pop.
That would have been great if they just would have started just doing the dance from like season 6 of the Cosby Show. Such as a weird, it's just yeah, every,
I would like
everyone.
To see the OJ trial recreated on picture pages with that little B pen.
Remember picture pages? Holy Christ,
time
I forgot
to grab
I,
your
I crayons
in your pencil.
Yeah. You can make with picture pages till Cosby does another picture page with you. Boop.
Time to fall asleep. When you wake up, I'll be done with my picture pages. This is the thing I'm talking about. I'd like to talk to you about murder.
Colin Smith writes in, has there ever been a worse division in hockey than the dumpster fire that is the Pacific Division this season, and when? Well, that requires a level of research we're not right. prepared to have on this show, but I
Southeast.
Think if you look back at some of those seasons, maybe in the...
The Caps were just runaway.
Yeah, the Patrick Division. Well, the Southeast,
yeah,
for sure.
That
yeah,
that was really terrible.
The Southeast Division definitely had some work. Because think of it this way. In the Southeast at any time, there was only three good teams, right?
It was
in the Pacific right now, you have three good teams.
Two good teams.
Well, come on. The Kings, the Sharks, and the Ducks.
You like the Sharks so much.
But they're a playoff team. I mean, like, I would put the 2016 San Jose Sharks up against the Thrashers or the Hurricanes.
But I mean, like, in terms of, like, the really bad divisions were, like, back when the NHL had 20 teams and it was, like, four per division or whatever.
Yeah.
And there would always be that one team that would be the fourth playoff team that had, like, seven. Like, the year Minnesota went to the Cup Final and lost to Pittsburgh, they were below 500 for the season. Like, that was a weird time back then. I don't know if they were that bad, but they were really, really – and the Penguins waxed them in the final. But
yeah.
Pacific's gotten a little bit – better, I think, because the Ducks are winning now, but it's not
there's
good.
Still a, it's still a better division overall than whatever the Southeast
right.
had in its,
right,
in
yeah.
its worst season. That's a
right.
really, really good point. Yeah. Nikolai Vincelli writes in, which team out of the playoffs right now do you see taking a wild card spot at the end of the season? Well, the obvious answer would be that you expect Colorado to fall out of a wild card spot.
But who passes them?
It'd be Minnesota if they make a coaching change. Here's the thing about the Devils.
I'll tell you something.
If
the
Devils make the playoffs now, it looks. I'm assuming Pittsburgh's got their shit in order now. They're not gonna falter. The Rangers will make the playoffs. The Capitals have already made the playoffs, pretty
right.
much. Which means that if the Devils are gonna get in, it's gonna be via the wild card, and it means most likely it's going to be over either Boston or the Islanders, and that's gonna be tough. That's gonna be a tough gig. I mean. I think the Islanders are a better team than the Devils. I think Boston's undoubtedly a better team than the Devils. But I have been underestimating this team all year long, and they seem to keep finding ways to win, which is weird.
I'm not entirely sold on Boston and Pittsburgh, I think.
You're not sold on Pittsburgh?
I'm not sold on Pittsburgh just yet.
I mean, it's possible Sidney won't have another game where he doesn't score.
I mean, this is what I don't get, too, is when Crosby had 13 points in 24 games – it was like, nah, this isn't him. But when he has like 31 and 20.
Oh, that's him.
Oh, that's totally. That's him. Told
uh-huh.
you. Told you.
That's
told
right.
you he's great.
You know what he was doing during those 24 games? He was watching. That's right. Watching and waiting. Sidney watches.
I'll tell you. You know what? I'm gonna say the team that gets in that's not in now. I feel like it's pretty much set for the most part. I'll say, see, I don't think Minnesota. I mean, they do have all those games in hand. I'll say, all right, I watched that Minnesota game at the Garden. They just look so bad. I'll say Montreal gets in over, I don't know, someone in the East. I think as long as Ben Scrivens holds the fort until Carey Price theoretically comes back, I still like Montreal.
I do, too. I think they'll turn around at some point. I think that's another team where if Bergeron ever swallows his pride and says, all right, I screwed up. Here's your new coach, Guy Boucher or something, like they'll be fine. Pat, whose avatar is, in fact, an egg surrounded by orange, writes
Ooh.
In, how do bribe you guys to come to Vermont and try my taco shop out? Now, this sounds a little bit sketchy, not only because he's an egg, but because he doesn't name the taco shop.
Just the taco shop.
Why would there be a taco shop in Vermont? Those people don't eat tacos.
Yeah, that's weird. I remember Shani posted a picture a couple months ago of, like, a burrito place in Cape Cod, and he was like, this is the best burrito ever. Like, I've never been there. And I don't want to stereotype, but there's no way the best burrito in the world is in Cape Cod. There's just no way.
See, that does remind me, though, of when I was in Sochi and they had a burrito truck right outside of our dorm, the dorm where we stayed. It didn't have a shower curtain.
Is it good?
And it was great because they didn't know how to make burritos. And they didn't know what went inside of it. It was literally just taking whatever they could find and putting it inside. I found carrot strips inside of a burrito once. And it was great. I mean, I gave them so much. I gave them so many points for trying. And honestly, like, this is the setup in Sochi. Dormitories, burrito truck that puts carrot strips inside the burritos. And then right next to it was a vodka bar that did karaoke at night. And the great thing about this bar was that all the writers would go there, including Pierre LeBrun, karaoke professional.
Scotty.
And burrito. Everybody would just drink wine and vodka. And one song would be in Russian. And all the Russians would go crazy because it's their karaoke. And the next song would be like, get your motors running. Head on the highway, Scotty.
Scotty, duet, Scotty. Let's do a duet.
It was like this beautiful moment of cultures coming together, then all walking outside and having burritos with chicken with carrot strips.
So you never really knew what was in the burrito until you bit into it?
No.
You would just say, like, chicken. And then it would be like chicken and, like, other, like, there could be like Captain Crunch in your burrito.
Yeah.
That actually sounds pretty good. I'm hungry right now.
This is something.
I saw that. I couldn't get it the image to load on my phone.
This is from Kevin.
Kevin.
What do you think about extending the end of the game beyond the 60 minutes if a team took a penalty within the last minute of the game? I love these sort of, like, what if we reinvented the rules kind of questions. Say someone commits an intent to injure type penalty with 30 seconds left in the game and gets a 5-minute major. Shouldn't the team be allowed to use the full 5 minutes to attempt to get back into the game instead of a 5-minute major that could have hurt their player and also not give them more than 30 seconds power play time? Well, you're saying the end of the game. You're saying, hold on, so it's two different things. Like,
right.
If you have a penalty at the end of the game, it carries over into overtime.
I think he means, like, at the very, very
end. He's talking about, like, this bothers me, but in a different way. Like, I hate the idea that there's no repercussion for a team taking a penalty at the end of the 3-on-3 that carries over into the shootout. That always bothered me in the other format, too. It's like, there should be a thing where, like, my idea was, like, if you go to the shootout, the team that has the power play, in theory, gets to choose, do I want to shoot first twice? Or do I want my opponent to shoot first twice? So you could conceivably put the game away if you wanted to.
With
or
one
if you
shot,
have, if
yeah.
you have the utmost confidence in your goaltender to be the determining factor, you can have them shoot twice, stop both shots, and then
score once,
you know,
win.
Score once and win pretty much. Almost.
I'm not against that idea. I also like the idea of the strategy of, like, you know, remember when it was 4-on-4? Remember when it was 4-on-4?
Yeah, I do. It was
a year.
Good times.
Back there
a year ago.
I think Obama was president then. When it was 4-on-3 in the last 2 minutes of overtime, if you were the three, you could literally do anything you wanted,
right.
And then nothing was going to change. If it's like, oh, it's a 2-on-1 in front of the net, just tackle the other guy because you go to the box, it's 4-on-3, nothing changes. So I hated that, but I do like the thinking aspect of it where you can strategically take penalties. But I do think, like, if you're in the box at the end of regulation and overtime, you shouldn't be in the shootout. Like, if Pavel Datsyuk trips somebody with, like, 15 seconds to go, he shouldn't be in the shootout.
Right.
That's how I feel.
Right. Did you just like, thanks Obama, the 3-on-3? Was that what you did?
I mean, not for nothing. If it turns out that in those Hillary emails, she advocated for 3-on-3, that should sink her campaign.
Well, the problem with – here's the thing.
Top secret.
If you want to blame Obama for the 3-on-3 – there's a lot of people that say Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama knows exactly what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people that say Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. But Barack Obama knows exactly what he's doing. See, you're blank slating because you don't know that's what Marco Rubio did in the debate.
I was thinking. I'm like, I know he's referencing
something. There's like five people in D.C. that are applauding the podcast right now because I got real smart and political on them.
I showed
that video to Ruby last night because she's like – we were watching the results from New Hampshire last night when I got home from the Devils game. And she's like, wow, man. Like, what the hell happened to Rubio? Like, oh, that's right. You were in Chicago last weekend. So you didn't see what happened in this debate. She's like, what happened in this debate? So I show her the video, and it's like, if you haven't seen it, it's
right. He repeats, like, himself over.
Christie went after him, and then Rubio repeated that same phrase I did, or a facsimile of it, to every response. And of course, then, like, Fred Flintstone gets to go, that's it. There he is again, Bonnie, doing the 25-second speech. And like, and it was his last, like, Christie, I think, dropped out, but like, that was his last gasp. It reminded me of the end of Wrath of Khan, where Khan's gonna die, and he puts his bloody handprint on the Genesis device, and he's like, you'll not get away.
Taking everyone with me.
Yeah, taking everyone with me.
See, I thought we were setting up like a Trump thing where he was going to be like, you know, I hate 3-on-3. I want to build a wall in front of the net. I thought we were doing like political references.
Here's how we solve overtime. We get some really smart people together. We put them in a room. We have them figure it out. Like, if I could run a campaign and that's the only thing I needed to do, what he's doing now, preying on the fears of people, and then the answer to everything else is get smart people and put them in a room and they'll figure it out.
I also, but like, here's the thing. I get what he's doing, and it's... it's evil, but it's smart. Like, what's it like? Why would you want to be? I don't get why he would want to be president. Like, he's this super rich dude, and like, this is probably fun to just stand in front of the microphone and yell shit. He's eventually gonna have to do work, you know, like for 4 years.
Really?
I mean, in theory, I guess he has to. But
he's gonna name his son chief of staff. Let's be honest. Like, it's pretty obvious.
I'm gonna name Ivanka. As part of my cabinet, because she designed the cabinets in my home.
Secretary to the UN, Ivanka Trump. I think when you're Donald Trump and you've conquered so many things in life and your ego is that big, you need to feed it more. You know, you need to feed that ego more. And the only way to do it at a certain point is to become president of the United States. Like, that's the next level. Like, after you put your name on every building and you have your own wine label and you had your own reality show and you think of yourself so big and so important, the only thing you can do then is become president.
I
think he's a raging racist.
Oh,
and he
yeah.
really does believe that when he becomes president, not only will he build a wall to keep Mexicans out, he'll tell the Mexican government they have to build it. And I have a feeling he's going to threaten them with the bomb if they don't.
Right. He's going to be like, I'm going to drop a nuclear weapon right here. You realize we share a border, Mr. President, right? Like, it's
yeah, but the winds blow southbound.
When I build
Sorry,
these Trump
Central America.
Fans.
Some Trump fans.
I got my people working on it. I can't do a Trump voice.
No, it's fine. My Trump voice is also my Sean Leahy voice. Is everybody listening to the podcast is really not saying to themselves right
it
now?
It is a little bit.
I'm going to build a wall. I'm going to get some trail mix. Watch you build that wall.
Somebody wants us to speculate who claims Aeroff based on absolutely no information whatsoever.
Well, I made the joke this morning that it should be Edmonton, and it should be Edmonton. I know they have a contract issue. They have too many contracts right now, but like,
they have 50.
There's absolutely no reason why they can't figure out, put some really smart people in a room together and figure out how to fit Christian Aeroff on that blue line.
Make Edmonton great again. Craig McTavish.
We would sell a million of those hats if we had them. Make Edmonton great again? My God.
There's a nice red hat.
Oh, it's so good. That's the last thing I want to talk about today. I talked to McDavid and Hall yesterday for a story for Puck Daddy. They're rooming together with Luke Gadzik.
The triple?
Yeah, they roomed together in,
really?
In a house.
Oh,
and it was interesting to see. No, not on the road.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, that's a weird road situation.
No, it's not like, Luke, you get the weird chair that's like pleather.
Right. The one you throw your suitcase on when you're the second
that
you get in the
hotel chair room. That's pleather because everyone sits in it naked and there's no reason it should be cloth anything in that whole room.
Well, no, what I was picturing is like, you know, two beds. McDavid in one, Hall in the other, and then Gadzik protecting them by sitting outside in a chair outside the door with his arms folded.
That's right, in case somebody sneaks in to like slash them.
I'm gonna protect these kids.
But I just thought it was interesting because I remember like all that speculation about like that generation of Oilers players and Hall being the prominent example, being like having been poisoned by this whole process, like being down on themselves and being like, we ain't gonna ever figure this stuff out. Can you make the playoffs kick dirt? and then Drager came out 2 years ago in December 2014 and talked about how,
you shouldn't make fun of Gary Bettman.
No. And talked about how Taylor Hall, you know, was feeling pissy about the game plans not being geared towards his game and that whole thing. I'm guessing with regime change comes a change in attitude, but I just find it interesting that, like, not only did McDavid want a room with a player instead of with a family in Edmonton. But McClellan was like, you know, it's really great leadership that Taylor Hall decided to take this on, taking this wayward teenager. And put him in a house.
This poor guy.
And I just find it interesting that the switch has been flipped, and now it's Taylor Hall being like, nobody's worried about Taylor Hall being, you know, kicking back with a Michelob or whatever the hell, little bats at night and going, yeah, I remember the last time I had hope in this job. Yeah. And then I got crushed by
I was a young man back then. The ripe age at 21.
But I, I, I only want good things for Edmonton. Like I said the other day, I'm like, I'm tired of them being in the lottery. I'd be so happy if they made the playoffs. They won't, probably.
No.
But it's interesting to see how that because it's like, if I'm Taylor Hall, I'm like, oh, come on now with this kid coming in, and all of a sudden he's the face of the franchise. I'm the face of the franchise, the Look Kennedy-esque face of the franchise.
Well, I say that I was here first, and I will be the man that leads us to glory.
Jordan, tell this kid what for.
The thing that I would worry about is not so much attitude. It's just when you lose all the time and you have these bad habits that get built in from constantly getting out of your system, and you have a new system every year with a new coach every year. But it's more like I think it's easy – not easy, but like it's good that he's doing that. I just think it's more about like in Detroit when you're constantly winning and you constantly – you go from Yzerman to Datsyuk to
– Zetterberg.
And to Zetterberg to now you have, you know, the kids there. Like it's like this like trickle-down thing of like – playing the right way, which is such an annoying thing, but it's a thing. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have those guys at Edmonton, if you've been constantly playing the wrong way for 10 years, then like I think it's more on the ice than off. I think it's off the ice. Like right now, it's easy to be optimistic, but it's just one of those things where it's like on the ice, you get down 2-1. You've been down 2-1 in a game 2,000 times in your career, and you slip out of it, and you start doing this, doing you get away. I think that's the habit that's hard to break.
The guys that are there now, obviously, you're talking about DeBoss. Dylan Larkin, Dylan Larkin. Finally, Dave Lozo, since we haven't spoken together on this podcast since the Super Bowl, what was your favorite Super Bowl commercial on the Super Bowl? I asked Ryan Lambert this on Monday, and he got angry with me because he hates football.
Get out of here. He hates football?
Yeah, I know, right?
No way. Boy, I wish you would have told me this before I came in.
You don't remember any of them?
I mean... I remember there was a lot of bowel movement related ones.
There was
that
like
really
a talking colon of some sort or small intestine.
The Drake one, I said on Twitter, the Drake one would have been good if when all those like, you know, execs were giving him lyrics, if he actually would have incorporated them into Hotline, like that would have been funny.
Oh, that's a really good point. Like right. Instead of just being of like, it, hey, that's a great idea. Yeah. It should have been at the end. It should have been him performing the song
like
with
forcing all the
with like
phrases
to your commitment.
Yeah, that would have been really.
Yeah,
good.
That would have been really funny.
Give me your. Tell me yours.
I like the baby monkey.
That was
one.
The worst
I love
one.
That one a lot.
That was so weird. who wants them? I get the baby part. I get the puppy part. Nobody wants to hang out with a hairy monkey. No, that's weird.
The CGI was really creepy. I loved everything about it. It was super memorable.
The walk-in one was funny.
The walk-in one was
really
funny.
Special.
I liked the Willem Dafoe one because I like those Snickers commercials where people turn into other people when they're angry.
Okay.
I always enjoy that. And also my least favorite one is the one with the Batman versus Superman movie where I don't believe they know how to market it anymore. Now they're just making Turkish Airline commercials about going to Gotham City, and they're like, let's see if this thing sticks.
Oh, my favorite one. All right, it's more because of how bad it was, but it's the one where like the 80-year-old guy's sitting alone in a chair, and he's miserable and he hates his life, and he's thinking back to the time when he used to be an astronaut, and his kid's like, I'm gonna drive you in an Audi. I'm gonna put you in an Audi and let you drive it at night. So like this guy, he's clearly not happy. He's depressed. He's miserably. He's living with his son and his wife. And he's like, I'll just put him in an Audi, let him do 120 miles an hour on this road in the middle of the night. Yeah, that's Audi. Buy Audi if your dad's really sad. There was all the weird Bowie and the Freddie Mercury songs. Like every other commercial had a Bowie or a Freddie Mercury song in it. Did somebody like a month ago be like, all right, they're both dead.
Yeah.
Let's capitalize on this.
You know what would make my grandpa happy? A man who touched God in the stars. Is putting him on the ground in a sedan.
Right, and like, okay, so let's say he gets in the Audi and he's driving, and you're. It's not a driving instructor. You can't tap the brakes if he starts to lose his mind.
Yeah, it was night out too. Right. It reminded me of those scenes of when the Batmobile would return to Wayne Manor and like the twisty turny roads through the woods.
Only it's a guy who keeps flashing back to like flying in space. He's doing 98 miles an hour in his car.
That's a great idea. Put an octogenarian behind the wheel who has PTSD.
Who looks miserable and like may just like jerk the car off the road at some point. Like, son, you wasted your life and now I'm going to waste it completely. Bang. Audi. Pick up one today at your local Audi dealer. Did we want to talk about the Flames and the Gaudreau and
the
Monahan?
We have a few minutes left. Go ahead.
Do we know what they did?
They were late to practice. My working theory.
But that's it, though, right?
I don't want to like you know create a situation here or anything. But my working theory is that it was Monday.
the Super
day
Bowl
after Sunday.
Right, yeah.
They roomed together. They got there a little late.
A little.
And they practiced terribly. And Bob Hartley said, no.
No.
You do not play tonight.
This is not the way you do it in Calgary. See, I think, whatever they did wasn't a big deal. And I feel like if you're going to make a statement to your team, it's a really good time to do it when Toronto's coming to town. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it was like a big divisional or, you know, conference game and you needed the 2 points really badly because it's a 4-point game, like, I think you probably know you can beat Toronto without Monahan and Gaudreau. You've got Giordano, you got Brody, you got enough forwards to beat essentially an AHL team at this point. So, I don't know. It read to me as like a little phony, like a little, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Boring Sean Monahan. I had to check this. I didn't check it last night. I asked Johnny Gaudreau if he bought any Skittles to eat while he watched the game tonight, but he said he didn't bring any. Again, kudos to the whoever invented that Twitter feed is a genius.
It's what's his name? Isn't it Brian McGrattan?
That was the thought that it was Brian McGrattan, right?
I've been assuming it's like it's. I assume that's him. The way we all just know it's Roberto Luongo with Sean Bowen.
Yeah, but
it?
I mean, like, you know, the last time I assumed something about a Twitter feed, Roberto Luongo tore me a new butthole because I said it was James Duffy that did his feed. So I'm not going to assume anything until Big Earn comes out and reveals himself to the world.
Do you want to bait him into, like, you know what? I'm pretty sure that's Pierre LeBrun doing boring Sean Monahan.
I thought you were going to be like, this is way too intelligent for a goonish thug like Brian McGrattan, right?
I mean, Brian McGrattan's the kind of guy who you know, he fights for a living. He can't possibly be smart or funny enough to do that.
It's pretty clear how we bring him out of the shadows. I tell Brian McGrattan that I will get him into the All-Star game if he reveals himself. Sir, I have a track record and I...
Would you like to go to Los Angeles next year, sir, for free? Come on.
All right. Well, that's the show for today. In the grand Wednesday podcast tradition, Dave Lozo will now vamp as I shut off the recording. Thank you, everybody. By the way, redbubble.com. If you search for the podcast, an entire new slate of T-shirts, many of them inspired by the Nashville stuff, including one that says Nerd Blogger in Nashville colors that I'm very excited about. And Take Your Eye Off the Puck, still available on Amazon if you want to buy it. That's about it. Go ahead.
Let's talk about the sexually frustrated Devils fans as Greg signs off. You know, as long as you're just doing something you love with somebody else you love, you know, there shouldn't be any judgment passed on that. You know, sucking, not sucking, swallowing, not swallowing, watching. Not watching. You know what? Can't we just live in a free, open society where we're just, you know, we're comfortable with ourselves and... Are you ready to turn it off?
I was waiting for you to finish.
Oh, no. I was running out of room. You know, do whatever you want with whoever you want as long as it's consensual and everyone's enjoying it. Don't let Devils fans judge you. Goodbye.
Rangers suck! Lozo's limp! Islanders! Cuckold! Capital!
Bye, everybody.
Flyers bye-bye Agra.